The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They're not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice.
Today on the lab report, we're going to talk about boron.
Boron.
It's a trace
mineral. It's important. Boron.
What is boron?
The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report.
You know another weird word aside from boron?
What is it?
Corbels.
What is corbels? What is that?
They're like the things that support. They're like support brackets.
Oh, strange word.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Hello!
Hi, Michael Chapman. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Patty Devers?
I am crushing it, and I'm very excited about boron and corbels.
Patty, I have to tell you, I think this topic's terrible.
I do too.
I think we should do something totally different.
It's just like saying the word boron, which is why I thought it was a good topic for a podcast.
We looked at it, and we were like, even learning about it is boring.
We're reading all of these papers, and I'm like, I can't even get through the papers.
Yeah, and the PubMed article said nothing boring about boron, but they lied. Big time.
We tried.
Before we entirely leave boron, here's what I think we should do.
Okay.
I'm going to put 5 minutes up on the clock.
Okay.
And then you're going to have to list everything you know about boron. No, not 5 minutes. I'm going to give you 30 seconds. 5 minutes is far too long to be talking about boron. 30 seconds.
Okay.
All right. But before we do that, we should say that this is a podcast. It's called The Lab Report. It's brought to you by Genova Diagnostics. Thank you to Genova.
Thank you.
And it's where we talk about things like functional medicine, specialty lab testing, integrative therapeutics, and just 30 seconds of boron.
Well, if you're new to the show, it doesn't usually go like this, just so you know. This is just kind of a little quirky
but
one.
Maybe it should.
Maybe it should, but welcome. If you're new, if you're returning, thank you so much. Hopefully you would have subscribed to the show, follow it, rate, review, all that other good stuff on iTunes and Spotify.
Mm. And if you have feedback, you can always send that feedback to podcast@gdx.net. That's our email address where you send all that good stuffs.
Yeah, and if you are a consumer out there interested in checking out Genova's tests yourself, you can head over to Genova Connect, which is connect.gdx.net. There you'll find our testing. You can order it. We'll drop ship it right to your door. Super awesome.
Yeah. Not just a consumer, a thoughtful consumer.
Yeah.
A consumer who's interested in your own health. Yeah. That's right. And if you are one of those types of consumers, you can actually save a little bit of change by using the promo code TheLabReport20 and get 20% off of any of the lab testing available on Genova Connect. And Patty Devers, without further ado, you have 30 seconds. I am putting that on the clock.
When does it start?
Right now.
Okay, boron is a trace mineral. It's important. It helps with the growth and maintenance of bones. It helps with wound healing. It impacts how your body uses sex hormones and vitamin D. It boosts the absorption of magnesium. It decreases inflammation. It raises levels of antioxidant enzymes to help with that. It also improves your brain activity and short-term memory. It's also got preventative and therapeutic effects in various types of cancer. It's in your diet. Usually you get about 3 milligrams per day. You should be fine. It's in a lot of fruits and vegetables, but there are people who don't eat fruits and vegetables, but you should. But you can get it also in coffee if you don't eat things like avocados,
Patty,
or raisins, or prunes,
Patty, you
or
need
grapes,
to stop.
Peanut butter. So yeah.
Way over time.
Boron.
Way over time, Patty.
But kind of boring.
I will say I'm impressed by the amount of information you just provided in 30 seconds, although you were over time.
I drink a lot of coffee and I'm from the Northeast. But that being said, that's really all you need to know about boron, which now leaves us a whole bunch of other time. What would you like to talk about?
Well, is there any like high-level highlights that you'd like to single out before we move on to something we haven't decided about yet?
Not necessarily.
Okay, cool.
Okay, well, with boron out of the way,
Thank goodness. God, why did it take so long?
We have lots of time to talk about other things.
Well, 30 seconds of my life.
What would you like to talk about, Michael Chapman?
I don't know. Why am I so cranky?
Cranky?
Yeah.
You've always been cranky.
You're right.
You're right.
I'm getting older and older as the 30 seconds move along in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Exponentially, I think.
Wow.
And I've got a bit of a beef, I guess.
With?
I think we need to start thinking more about medical skepticism.
Oh.
And not just medical. I mean clinical. I mean health skepticism. I think we really need to start. We've got a lot of people in the echo chamber. You know what I mean? And we've got a lot of opinions. And we've got all this research, like I just showed you. And that doesn't, just because the title says boron's not boring, that doesn't make it so, because it's published in a peer-reviewed literature article. You know what I mean? So,
well, I'm going to tell you, this is exactly how I spent my weekend. Although you are cranky and have early onset grumpiness, I was also cranky this weekend because I was watching YouTube. And there are influencers all over YouTube, health influencers, to your point, spewing nonsense. And it was making me angrier and angrier and angrier. Like, it had 2 million views. I can predict the day you're going to die. I'm like, no, you cannot. What are you talking about? And I got angrier and angrier. And I thought, you know, at least you and I have medical degrees where we can actually go and really verify some of this stuff. But I feel bad for others who just trust things at face value. And it makes me really angry.
Well, and I would say it this way, too. It's not even that you need some sort of medical degree. All you need is, like, you need to think about things skeptically. You need to think about things. I mean, I'll say for myself, like, there's tons of things that I learned throughout the course of my quote-unquote medical degree, you know, naturopathic medical degree, that are probably inaccurate, and I would say doubly so for you. You know what I mean? It's like, how many of these things have we learned that have, over the course of time, been discovered to be not true, right? And that goes for any form of knowledge that continues to evolve. The problem becomes when there's some sort of perverse incentive involved, right? Somebody has an opinion, somebody has a grant, somebody has this, that, and the other that taints how they're going to report information and how they're going to interpret data. And it can start super benign, but before you know it, right, we've got a whole system that's dependent on something that is slightly inaccurate, and then it just gets accentuated and accentuated. And so from that perspective, I think we always have to come back and, like, just have a good, you know, gauge of, like, wait a minute, let me stop. I heard that information. Like, first, let me raise an eyebrow because that's interesting. And then let's do the logic work around it. Let's see what makes sense about that.
I would also say, for people listening to us, use that same skepticism listening to Patty and Michael. I mean, we use literature, we're literature based no matter what we say, but always, you know, trust but verify, as they used to say. But that same dose of healthy skepticism should apply everywhere.
You should never listen to what I say. Usually I'm intentionally lying to you just for my own hilarity.
That's not true.
I have an idea. Maybe we can kind of walk through an exercise. Maybe we can kind of demonstrate how really to, like, take something that at the time was gospel, right? We knew this to be true, and then has since kind of turned around on itself, and, like, how to go about processing information when you hear it. I don't know. Maybe that's an interesting exercise to try to, like, start to practice the muscle of skepticism. What do you think?
Well, I want to say, to your point earlier, we're in healthcare. So, yes, we learned things in medical school that now are proven to be just not true. And then you learn things, you unlearn things. It happens with diet all the time. You know, I think the best example is fat. So back in the 80s and 90s, fat's bad. Low-fat diets are important. But now we come to know that, no, fats are actually really, really important. In fact, cholesterol, we villainize cholesterol, but without cholesterol, we can't make hormones. And so I think that's probably our best example of things that you need to turn around and see, look at the downstream effects of some of these things.
No, it's a great example. And I guess I would say, so for using this as an example, like, where would we start to evaluate what went wrong and how that conclusion was made? Because it's like, it always starts with, like, we're trying to solve a problem. And at the time we were trying to figure out, like, cardiovascular disease. Like, it's a big, big problem, and what's causing it, and how do we correct it, right? And so
basically, they were solving for cardiovascular disease. People were eating a lot of fat in their diets. They had high cholesterol.
Were they?
I don't know. I assume so. They're like, okay, so the fats are causing your cholesterol to go high, so let's get rid of fats. Low fat diets the way to go. And of course, anytime you villainize a macronutrient, the outcome's not going to be great.
Yeah, and I would say I think part of what was happening was we had a variable that we could measure, which was cholesterol.
Correct.
We could do a lab test. So we could get a bunch of people with cardiovascular disease and those without, and we find this that we have a marker called cholesterol. We can measure it, and look, there's this there's a difference. These people mm-hmm. have high cholesterol, mm-hmm. and these people don't. And what is cholesterol?
Fat.
It's a fat, right? So bada boom, bada bing, you have correlation now being assumed to be causation.
Right.
And so therefore, with that type of, you know, it's a reductionism.
Right.
We've reduced an entire macronutrient down into cholesterol, which we think is a key differentiator between people with and without cardiovascular disease. And any time, like we talk about it.
It's like what I always say, like every house that burns down contains a sink. Therefore, sinks cause house fires.
Right.
That's just, you just can't reduce something that simply.
Right. And so I think the natural defense mechanism, because reductionism is natural. Mm-hmm. Like we want to make sense of things that are complicated. But where that leads you is some very bad places, which is what I think why you got so angry this weekend. What the natural response should be is to immediately say it's very, very highly likely that it's more complicated than the way mm-hmm. it's being laid out for me.
Right.
Always.
But that's also true of a lot of influencers. It's hard now with social media because there are big name influencers everywhere who are spouting medical information. And you always have to have that same dose of skepticism to your bigger point. Just like I got angry this weekend, you just step back and say, okay, what if that's not true?
Right.
And just, you know, really think about it logically.
Right. I've got an example that I think is more real time around genetic SNPs, mm-hmm. particularly when we were developing the methylation panel and some of the things that came to light around that, because I think the most well-known of the SNPs and the most talked about around this concept of methylation is an enzyme's polymorphism, or call it mutation, polymorphism, kind of a fancy word for mutation, called MTHFR, right? We've mm-hmm. talked about it on mm-hmm. here. We've talked about it in the methylation episodes. And, you know, for the most part, the reduction that happened with MTHFR was people who have this SNP need more folate.
Wrong.
Right?
Right.
And so do you want to peel that back one layer and then talk a little bit about maybe more accurate way to describe people with MTHFR SNPs?
Well, I would start here, because we say this all the time whenever we talk about SNPs, that your genes are not your destiny. Just because you have a genetic predisposition for something doesn't mean that it's going to come to fruition. If you have an MTHFR SNP, there are specific cofactors that work around this particular enzyme, namely B12 and folate within the methylation cycle. And so some people have variations. There are two very common ones. The first one is C677T, and the other is A1298C. And so those are the most
write
common.
Those down, people.
Those are the most common two variations, though there are thousands of variations within that one enzyme genetically.
Yeah. And what everything you just said is accurate, that genes do not create your destiny, and that there's a lot of things in this particular case, especially, that you can do to compensate. I will also say that that explanation is hugely reductionistic in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you two additional layers to this onion. One of which is population. The population being studied, because what we found in doing the methylation panel was these SNPs are present at different proportions in different ethnicities, different backgrounds, and different populations. A great example is COMT, which is another SNP around methylation, where it's actually most common for people of European descent to have one of two mutations. That is actually what most people have migrated to over the course of time. That is not the case for other populations, like people with Asian descent or like old world American descent.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's why, actually, if you look at our reports, Michael,
and
you,
it was a pain,
that,
right? We put that on the report, and yeah. we were all kind of like, oh, this is going to confuse people.
But it's
like,
so
you have to understand that, yeah. like, based on whatever lineage was, you know, part of your background,
right.
it might mean something totally
Correct.
Different.
Correct.
And here's the second layer to that onion. The reason why it might mean something totally different is there's very likely some other SNP, some other genetic conformation that is counterbalancing.
That we're not measuring. Right.
Right. Or 10 different
yes.
parts of the gene uh-huh. that have all come to counterbalance each other. And because the entire gene is trying to express itself effectively, if you've got a, like, it's like when you're walking, like with gait. Uh-huh. If you've got something wrong with the arches of your feet, then you counterbalance with something going on in your hip.
Compensate, yeah.
Right. And so there's constant compensation going on, even within the genome. And so if you just look at one spot, it might look dysfunctional, but it might be corrected in another spot.
Correct, which is why we look at genotypic and phenotypic markers to kind of make an educated decision. Just because you have a SNP doesn't mean you need B12 or folate, people. Just saying that.
Yeah, and so I think another thing that might be a fun exercise, because those are things that, like the low-fat diet, MTHFR, we've kind of... We know some of the accuracy and inaccuracy or the complexity now. But what about something that's like right now, something that is talked about all over the place that we don't necessarily know what the truth is, or we assume is just gospel? We assume
Ozempic is a great example.
Okay, say more.
So Ozempic is the trade name. Wegovy is another trade name of these drugs that are used called GLP-1 agonists, and that's glucagon-like peptide 1 agonists. And what that does, what these medications do, is they act and kind of hijack the GLP pathway, meaning when you eat food, there's this little hormone that gets released in your GI tract to signal to your brain that, hey, I'm getting full, I can stop eating. So these medications sort of take over that pathway to tell your brain it's satiated. The problem is these are new. Right, we know that it's been used in diabetics, can lower their blood sugar and increase some of the metabolic markers, but there's not a lot we know long term about these. So how would you want to maybe tear this apart, is or a way to be skeptic?
Okay.
Michael, how would you look at this in a skeptic way?
Perfect. So I think even just with your explanation, there's some things that we can kind of start to evaluate. The first thing that stood out to me was you said there's a hormone that tells your brain that you're satiated. And so the first thing I would say is, well, is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that that hormone is what tells your brain that it's satiated? Is it the only thing that tells your brain that it's satiated? And is that the only thing that hormone does? Or does it potentially do other things that we maybe don't know about?
Okay, so let me piggyback on that.
Okay.
So someone's out there listening and you're asking all of those questions right off the bat. Where do you go to find those answers? You're looking in PubMed or Google Scholar, where are you going to look for those things? And then even within PubMed and Google Scholar, you can read an article, but you still also have to question that article. So how do we cut through this noise? What would you tell people to do?
Yeah, I know. It's sort of like you start to pull at the thread and then all of a sudden the sweater falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things to keep in mind as we're doing questioning is understanding some core principles. That can be really helpful in guiding the navigation through information. So what I mean by that is I hearken back to one of my first pharmacology classes, and this wasn't even medical school. This was back in undergrad taking a neuropsychopharmacology class. And one of the first things that he said was, FYI, psychiatric medications, there's no such thing as a clean drug. Every single drug is a dirty drug. And what he meant by that was, There are effects beyond what that medication is said to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is a core principle. There are receptors elsewhere for serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
is an example, right? It's not just in the brain.
Sure.
And so the same would go for any type of medication, and this one included. So we don't know what the systemic effects. We know this one effect,
mm-hmm.
and quite likely, because we've done the studies, that effect is true. And it seems that it does have an impact on satiety. But we don't know what else that might be doing.
Okay.
And so also...
Which is fair.
Go ahead.
That's fair. But then my question to you would be like, okay, so where did you go to find these answers? Where would you go to find out where are the other GLP-1 receptors?
Well, that's probably actually where we do have a little bit more solid footing, is we probably have this pretty well demarcated, but what we haven't done is the second principle, which is what is the long-term implication mm-hmm. of disrupting a system?
Sure.
And I think a great example would be like the issue around calorie restriction and metabolism, right? Seems to work very well in the short term, right? You can lose weight pretty darn quickly by calorie restriction,
mm-hmm.
but the impact long-term on your metabolic rate as an adjustment, right? You're offsetting your system. And the long-term effect of that is it takes a long time to rebalance this. It takes more time to rebalance the system than it does to offset it, right? Like, you can lose weight quickly with calorie restriction and get your metabolic rate all wonky, pretty quick. And it takes a long time to rebound. Same thing with the microbiome. You can kill a lot of bugs in your microbiome with an antibiotic real quick. But how long does it take you to rebalance that microbiome afterwards? So that is, I think, another principle to keep in mind.
Again, I think this is another great example of the stopping that immediate thinking to run to reductionistic. Mm-hmm. You said it with MTHFR. There could be other things counteracting and keeping things in balance. Quite similarly, we don't know what other receptors are being affected with GLP-1 agonists. So I think you make an excellent point to just take a step back. Start asking the questions, even if you don't know the answers. Just don't take everything at face value, no matter what it is in the healthcare space, to really just start thinking critically. Your doctors, a lot of you are out there are doctors. You think in systems, like Michael, you just said, all things work within a system. So just take a step back. Don't be reductionistic to know just because someone says this does that, it also can do other things within the system.
Yeah. And I'll just make one other plug, and this would be coming from a kind of a naturopathic orientation, is that mm-hmm. there are no shortcuts.
Yeah.
Systems don't allow for shortcuts. And so to think that when you hear something that this is going to fix that, if it doesn't make sense with what grandma or mom said around eating healthy, exercising, yeah. breathing clean air,
so
getting water, yeah. like there are no shortcuts. And yeah. so there are things that we can do to work within our personal physiology. But if something sounds too good to be true, look, that phrase exists for a reason.
Mm. Okay. Although we hijacked the boron episode to go on this little rant, it actually is making me feel better. Like I said, over the weekend, I was just so angry because people are listening to this and believing it. So at least we put our public service announcement out there just to question some of these. If just because it's a big name influencer doesn't mean it's right. So healthy skepticism to your point earlier, Michael.
And look, 10 years time, you could probably listen back to this and we're going to sound like total borons. Next time on the Lab Report, maybe we should talk about boron.
I got lots to say. I don't know if anyone would want to hear it, though.
You think elements get offended?
I think people out there are big boron fans.
You think there's a lot of boron support?
Oh, yeah.
Haters gonna hate?
Yep.
You've been listening to the Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net.
I think the only people that like the time change
mm-hmm.
are people who get up way too early.
No, I get up really, really early, and I hate this time change. I like the one in the fall. This one messes me up big time.
But that's weird, because you normally wake up at like 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So at least now it's like a little bit closer to the normal time because 3 a.m. is 4 a.m.
Right.
And so like you're almost within a couple hours of a normal sleep-wake schedule.
But I go to bed early and it's still bright, you know? Now it's going to be bright and there's going to be sun in the evening. That's going to mess me all up.
You're right. There's no shortcuts.
No.
You just have to fix your sleep-wake cycle.